Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I see more and more every single day stories about the dangers of online predators. I think it used to be that if you found a predator online back in the day, you kind of really had to be digging and getting pretty deep into the web to run into somebody like that. They were definitely there, but I think the threat, at least for children, was more prominent in the real world, like at sports or even in their families, churches, things like that. But now predators are seriously only one click away on kid games, social media apps, and it's pretty scary to me. I remember being young and impressionable and self-conscious, really just wanting to feel accepted. But imagine having someone on the other end of the phone or the computer telling you that you are loved, even if you've never met them. They're filling that need that you have, but you don't even know who they are. I mean, I think that's terrifying. So today, we're actually going to be talking about just that, the dangers of online predators. Our episode this week begins in New York City. Now, I'm sure most people listening know the map of New York City. For those who don't, when you think of New York, you're probably thinking of the island or peninsula with all the tall buildings, Central Park, and Broadway. That's Manhattan. But just a short subway or ferry ride away is the more laid-back borough of Brooklyn. Brooklyn is kind of described more as a family-friendly area. It's definitely more out of the way of the hustle and bustle of New York City. Brooklyn is actually where our case is taking place, and it's where a young girl named Shanisha Forbes was raised. Growing up, Shanisha was described as very loving and caring. She loved to play, dance, and make people laugh. Even from a young age, she was happy-go-lucky. Shanisha was extremely close with her mother, Sandra Price, and she also had three other sisters. So it was a very fun and loud household. I mean, they're growing up in Brooklyn, I think that's just awesome. Shanisha's uncle, named Alton, actually lived nearby with his wife and kids. The family really did spend a lot of time together growing up. Alton was actually a sergeant with the NYPD's 77th Precinct. By the time Shanisha was 14 years old, he was no different. He was still spending a lot of time with his family. That Christmas, her family remembers her dancing in the living room and being so excited to finally get a new phone for Christmas. She actually lost her old phone, and you remember what it was like being 14. Friends are everything. Nowadays, phones are how you connect with your friends, and this wasn't any different. Like I said, Shanisha had actually lost her old phone, and now she's so excited that this Christmas, she gets this new phone. Now she can finally connect with her friends again. One of her friends, Takiya Hayes, is Shanisha's really good friend. She says that Brooklyn for them was the perfect mix of a small place and a big city, with a culture and a focus on the arts. Takiya says that she wouldn't have wanted to live anywhere else. By the time she and Shanisha were 14, they were kind of taking the place by storm. They loved living there. They were both very artistic, and Shanisha this year had just transferred to a writing school, a school that was centered on writing. She was very talented in that and was basically going to be an art school. After spending Christmas together, Shanisha's uncle Alton is actually on duty at the NYPD on the morning of January 5th, 2013. It's just a normal day until he receives a very distressing call on his personal cell phone. The phone call was from Shanisha's mother, Sandra. She's shockingly telling Alton that she thinks Shanisha is missing. Sandra tells Alton that she hasn't seen Shanisha since the day before. She keeps calling Shanisha, but she won't answer the phone. She also got a hold of every one of her friends, but none of them have heard from her. It's sad, too, because as a cop, it's a feeling I'm sure Alton knows all too well. You also just know every single statistic about missing kids, and so it's, like, so hard. Sandra knows it's only been a day, but she just can't shake the feeling that something is definitely very wrong here. Alton, like I said, knows the statistics for missing teens, but when it's your own niece, you can't help but jump to the worst conclusions of every bad thing you've ever seen. So he tells Sandra that, to be safe, they should immediately file a missing persons report, and that his precinct is going to perform a canvas to help look for Shanisha. After getting the call, the detective is sent out to Sandra's home that Saturday to grab some details. The first thing they ask is why she waited a full day to call her uncle, or well, Janisha's uncle, her brother-in-law, and report her daughter missing. She went missing while it was last seen Thursday morning, and it was now Friday. Apparently, Sandra thought you had to wait 24 hours before officially reporting someone missing. Now, I wonder where in the world she would have ever got that idea. Maybe it's because of all the departments who have told parents that. But apparently in New York, there's no such rule. As soon as you think someone is missing, you can file a report. Doesn't matter how long it's been. Okay, so Sandra explained that she hadn't left for work at 6:30 a.m. the day before, so Thursday. And on her way, she stopped and saw Shanisha sleeping in bed. She's leaving for work and she sees her in her room. An hour later, she actually texts her daughter to make sure that she woke up and caught the bus. Everything seemed fine. She immediately replied and let her mom know that yes, she's up and that she's actually on the bus on the way to school as of texting. Now I want to point out here that I'm not sure where the confusion is coming from, but multiple sources differ. Some say she went missing on Thursday, some say she went missing on Friday. So I'm not sure, but I was going off of like her mom's words and she said Thursday. I'm guessing maybe they reported her missing on Friday. That's where I think the confusion might be coming from, that she wasn't reported missing until Friday, so people are saying Friday. But I'm pretty sure that she, I mean, either way, it's just a day. But I just want to let that get out there. So after getting the text from her daughter.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That she was on her way to school later that day, Sandra actually got a notification from the school that her daughter had never actually shown up for school that Thursday, even though she had texted her mom and said she was on the bus on the way to school. So police asked Sandra if Shanisha had ever done this before, and Sandra was honest with them. Yeah, here and there. I mean, she, you know, it wasn't an all-time thing, but she had been late for school or cut class before. She had even snuck out once or twice or not told her mom where she was going. You know, typical teenager stuff. Pretty sure you guys have done that. But the fact that she is still not home is where normal teenager behavior for Shanisha turns concerning. She never would have stayed out this long without being in contact with not only her mom, but also all of her friends. Apparently, New York City is so big that every precinct actually gets 1 to 2 missing reports a day. But most of the time, it's just runaways, like runaway teens or young adults, that type of thing. But Shanisha's family tells police that they wish they could believe that Shanisha ran away, and it would be easier than believing that something bad had happened. You think about that whenever you're like, why can't I... When police are telling these families, like, well, maybe they're just a runaway. Don't you think they wish they were a runaway? Like, don't you think they wish it was just their kid being a teenager? They wouldn't be going that extreme if they didn't feel like something was wrong. And this is exactly what Shanisha's mom tells police. The police at this point understand that in order to find Shanisha, they need to reconstruct her life, which is always the first step. When you have a missing teenager, they need to find her friends, figure out who she spent time with, her usual schedule, her day, everything like that. The biggest question is if 14-year-old Shanisha has a boyfriend. That is obviously going to be the first question, but her sisters and her mother say no, she's only 14, she doesn't have a boyfriend. They aren't even sure that she's talking to a boy right now. Police then ask for her social media account name so they can learn everything about her. Now keep in mind, they're just looking at her profile from another profile. They don't have the passwords, and they're not getting into accounts. They just want to look at her timelines. So police get her social media accounts so they can kind of stalk her timeline. I was actually thinking about this when I was researching how social media has now created a digital footprint that we otherwise don't have with missing people, especially teenagers. Because they are so usually active on there, you can get to know a lot more about them just by looking at their pages. It's 2012, so we're not talking Instagram, we're talking Facebook here. When police gain access to her Facebook page, they actually learn that she had updated her status the Thursday afternoon that she went missing. So after texting her mom on the bus and saying, hey, I'm on my way to school, and then not showing up, she updated her Facebook page. This was obviously immediately a sigh of relief for everyone because it basically confirms that she willingly didn't go to school. And maybe she wasn't in as much trouble as they previously thought. She had access to her Facebook and was just casually posting. But it's the update on the status that makes everyone, including her sisters, question how well they really knew Shanisha. That afternoon, she had updated her status saying, quote, going to the movies with him. And police were like, who is him? No one knew. Her sisters had no idea. Before you're like, oh, why didn't her sisters or mom see that? Why didn't they check her Facebook page? This was 2012. I don't think parents at this point even realized how to even get onto Facebook. I mean, this was all very new. So before we're like, why didn't they immediately check her social media? 2012, 2011 was like Facebook prime, right? For younger kids, especially, it was kind of just barely getting there. So parents probably didn't even know that their kids had a Facebook page. It wasn't as public as it is now for like social media channels. Around this time, word had spread that Shanisha's family was looking for her. A community advocate from her own neighborhood, named Tony Herbert, came forward to help spread the news. Tony decided to post a missing person poster order online to a vast network that he had amassed. Again, I think this is something that we have seen happen in recent years, the power of social media spreading the word for missing persons, and how important that actually is. I think any time that the right sources can spread awareness for a victim, the better. When Tony posted a message about Shanisha, the public went to work. Citizens began forwarding the message over to all the shelters in the area to make sure that no one had seen her. They began reposting to missing persons boards and meeting in person to hand out flyers. I think this is just something that the community can do to help police when we're in like an active missing person search. So the community is fighting to help and police are trying to discover, number one, where they went to the movies, where she said she went to the movies, and number two, who is him? Police, back at the station, subpoena Shanisha's phone and Facebook records. At this point, they're like, we need to get the records. We need to see who she's talking to. Because they need to figure out who the mysterious boy is from her Facebook post. She actually had over 1,600 friends. And I feel like that's a lot for back then. I think back then, I probably only had like 800, 900 friends maybe at the time. And at the time, it was like really people that I was really close to, like nobody else, mixed in with a little bit of family. So police are trying to prioritize who they should talk to based on her social media presence. They actually started with a young girl named Michelle. Apparently, Michelle was Shanisha's bestest friend. They asked Michelle about the guy from the Facebook post, but she tells them that she isn't for sure who it is either, or if Shanisha even had a boyfriend at the moment. She tells them that Shanisha always kept the boy she was talking to on the down low. She was very quiet about boys, so Michelle couldn't be sure. But she does tell police that if Shanisha does have a boyfriend, she knows the two names that she thinks she might have been talking to. One was named Marcus, and the other was named Chris. She's like, I think she's been conversing with two boys that have these names, but I don't even know who they are. So detectives take note of the names. But Michelle also tells them that Shanisha had started her freshman year at the new writing school in September and that by November, she was kind of having some problems at school. She was struggling with bullies and it was getting pretty bad. Horrible. Shanisha's family had known about the bullies and had even set up an appointment with the principal to allow her to leave school a couple minutes early so she wouldn't have to run into them. Which is sad that she would have to leave school early so that she doesn't have to face her bullies. And although Shanisha was very fun-loving at home, she was very shy and quiet at school. She was the new girl. Her main bully was actually a boy named William Harris. Police learned this from Facebook because William had been bullying her on her public timeline. It wasn't just in person. Like I said, he had taken bullying to Facebook and was writing awful things on her wall and calling her names. I don't know if it's still this way, but on Facebook it used to be that you could just publicly write a message on someone's timeline. That was really messed up, right? That someone would go that far to bully somebody. But he was doing that, calling her the B word and all kinds of names. When police learn about the seriousness of the bullying, they realize that they could very much right now be dealing with a group of kids who hurt Shanisha. We've seen it before, teenagers who attack another teenager. And we will most likely see it again. Teenagers can be so cruel. The police are like, wait, is she missing because of a group of her peers attacked her? Police head back to the station and decide to dig up what they can on William Harris, the main bully. But when they attempt to find his Facebook page, the one he had been using to bully Shanisha, police discover that it had been deleted. This alarms them even more. So police decide to talk to William in person and confront him about the bullying and Shanisha's disappearance. William tells police that he had no idea where Shanisha was or is, but that he didn't hurt her. He also explains that he doesn't really know why he posted the things he did about her, other than that he just kind of seen other kids bullying her and decided to jump on the bandwagon. According to Pacer.org and the National Center for Educational Statistics, one out of every five students reports being bullied. Even scarier, one in five teens, so ages 9 to 12, have already reported being cyberbullied. And it's probably so much worse now because of TikTok and all the other social media outlets. Probably even worse, right? So police ask William, okay, so you're just bullying her for fun? Okay, whatever. Why did you delete your Facebook page around the same time that she went missing? Were you trying to hide the fact that you had been bullying her? What's going on? He goes, oh no, I didn't delete my Facebook page. Facebook suspended my account because of the bullying. Williams also claims to have an alibi on the day of her disappearance, that he was at school, and then had basketball practice after school. Police go to confirm his alibi, and they do. He was at school the whole time, and then he had practice. While all of this is happening, Shanisha's family is still reaching out to the public via the media. It's been a couple of days now. You can watch the actual news footage of them. It really is just heartbreaking to see the family pleading for her life. They update the public about her last Facebook status and say, we're looking for this mysterious guy that supposedly went to the theaters with her. We still don't know who he is. When police had gone to the local movie theaters and checked to see if she had ever gone, I'm assuming they checked for cameras, but there weren't any, no one was able to give any information that helped the investigation. No employees remembered seeing her that day. They checked multiple theaters. Nothing happened. Although it feels like the police have sifted through Shanisha's life and uncovered, honestly, a lot of possible leads, none of them seem to be panning out. They still had no idea who the mysterious guy from his Facebook post was. 2 days later, she has still not returned and the search is still ongoing when neighboring police at the 66th precinct get a 911 call. A man walking his dog on Garrettson Beach had stumbled across a body of a young 14 to 15-year-old girl laying naked in the sand. When detectives working Shanisha's case hear about the body of a young female being found in a neighboring area, they rush to the scene. But any hope of identifying this victim goes out the window when police discover that the body had been burned badly. The face was unrecognizable, and there was no school ID or anything else to help with identification. It took a couple of days to determine who the body was, but it eventually came back to the missing Shanisha. The burns were actually concentrated near her hands, arms, and legs. They were post-mortem, which means that she was burned after she was killed. It was determined that she died by asphyxia, which means she was smothered or strangled. There were no other significant injuries or evidence of recent sexual activity. Her uncle and her mom brought in to try and make a positive ID. Because police couldn't really confirm due to the burns, they asked her family to help. Despite the burns, they felt like they could comfortably say that it was Shanisha. No parent should ever have to do that. No parent should ever have to look at their child's burned body and say, okay, yeah, despite the burns, we can tell it's her. I guess I just don't understand what burning the body is going to do. People should realize they're still going to figure out who it is. Shanisha's mom had actually said that ever since the day she had to go in and identify her daughter, her life will never be the same. From that moment on, everything changed for her. Police back at the beach decide to comb the area for clues. They noticed, 20 to 25 feet away, that there were remnants of a bonfire. There were empty and full cans of beer lying around, and they couldn't help but wonder if Shanisha had been thrown or fell into this fire. They wonder if the people she was with were maybe too scared to get help, or didn't want to get in trouble, or worse, if they were the ones who killed her. Another detective came across a receipt from a liquor store in the sand. The liquor was purchased at 2:30 p.m. on Friday, January 5th, which would be the day after Shanisha went missing. Police head to the liquor store and try to figure out who made that exact purchase. They end up getting the credit card and security camera footage from that time. Finally, security footage. They discover a single man came into the store and bought the exact bottle of liquor. The card belonged to him. It was a 22-year-old pre-med student named Sheriff. Apologies for butchering his name, Sharif. Detectives eventually track Sheriff down near his home. He claims to not recognize Shanisha. He says that he and his friend had just come to the beach to drink that day and that they didn't even have a bonfire. He insists that he didn't see anything suspicious. This was the day after Shanisha went missing. Sheriff tells police that he was smoking some marijuana and that's why he was hesitant to be completely forthcoming with them. But because they're now suspecting a murder, he says, "I'll be honest, that's the only reason I was acting hesitant." Detectives decide to ask him to provide a DNA sample, even though he had no DNA to compare it to. They just wanted to see if he would be willing to agree, and he does. Back at the station, Shanisha's private Facebook records finally come through at this point, so now they have access to her Facebook messages. This is when police discover that Shanisha talked to a lot of people, men and women, on Facebook. She even flirted with a couple of men on there. These men and women were not in her everyday life. These were random strangers on the internet. Now, this isn't weird or alarming in the least. A lot of people make online connections. But police know that anyone can hide behind a profile on Facebook. So when it's a 14-year-old girl, it's a little more worrisome. What they figure is the best way to confirm all these identities is to use the attached phone numbers to each Facebook account that she heavily talked to. They plan to run those numbers through the police database. They're like, "We'll try to figure out if these people are who they say they are by running the phone numbers." Using those numbers, police ended up speaking to 7 to 10 older high school students, still under the age of 18, in the area, who had been in contact with Shanisha. All of them were very cooperative. They claimed, "Yeah, I talked to her, but I don't know where she is now." Around this time, her private phone records finally come in. Although police couldn't see the actual content of the texts or calls, they could see how often she called or texted a certain number. So all they got were outgoing and incoming logs. They couldn't see the texts themselves. They discovered through going these records that one number actually called Shanisha 30 to 40 times a day before she went missing and in the days leading up to her disappearance. So police are like, "Okay, we have to figure out who this number belongs to." They decide to subpoena the name tied to the number. They believe it's probably the mysterious man from her Facebook page. Eventually, they match the number to a man named Christian Ferdinand, whose address says he lives right by Shanisha. If you remember, her friend Michelle said that she thought Shanisha was talking to a boy named Chris. This guy's name is Christian. Detectives immediately head to Christian's house. On their way to the address, they discover something weird. The address that was attached to the phone number literally does not exist. The address was fake. It led to a cell phone store. It wasn't even a real house. Police checked the store for any connection to a man named Christian, but the store was like, "I have no idea what you're talking about. This is just a cell phone store." This was a very bad sign. Whoever Shanisha was talking to was likely catfishing her. The address attached to the phone wasn't real. It was a very strong indicator that he wasn't who he claimed to be. Police decided to subpoena the DMV records attached to the name Christian Ferdinand, because they didn't even know if he was a real person at this point. So they're just like, "We don't even know if this is a real person." While they were waiting for the DMV records, they continued to look over the evidence they already had. That's when they noticed a 35-minute call that Shanisha made to an unknown number the night before she went missing. Not like she called the number at that time, but the fact that it was a 35-minute call stuck out to them, especially since it took place the night before she disappeared. The police, that stood out. The call lasted until 1 a.m. Several texts were sent from that same number the next morning before her cell phone was shut off. So police were like, "Hey, we need to figure out who this number belongs to. This looks like the last person Shanisha was in contact with before she disappeared." They traced the number back to another high school student named Derek, who also lived in Brooklyn. Police tracked Derek's address and spoke to him about Shanisha. Derek admitted that he met Shanisha online on Facebook and they had been speaking regularly. They also learned that this was the him from her Facebook post. Derek admits it, saying, "Yeah, that was about me. We were supposed to go to the movies." But Derek tells police that Shanisha stood him up. They were supposed to meet in person for the first time, but she never showed up. He says that's when he contacted her that morning to confirm their plans. She was acting super shady. He kind of just blew him off, saying, okay, we'll just do it another day. Derek says he felt like when Shanisha was on the phone with him, there was someone else in the room based on how she was talking to him, compared to how she had been talking to him before. Police checked Derek's alibi of being home with his uncle all day, and it checked out. Today they don't think Shanisha ever actually met Derek in person. Her Facebook post about him, the one saying she was going to the movies with him, was likely just something she posted, but it doesn't seem like she went through with the plan. At this point, police don't even know where to go from here. Think of all the leads they've tried to track down, and none of them have gone anywhere. Is this a stranger abduction and murder? Is it connected to the mysterious Christian Ferdinand? Does it have anything to do with the bowling and the group of teenagers? Time passes. The family mourns Shanisha's loss, and police continue chasing clues. At this point, police finally decide to try and triangulate the last person or the last place the cell phone pinged. Now, it's important to note that they won't be able to get the exact location. It will only be near a tower. That's probably why they weren't leaning very heavily on this in the first place. But they were like, let's see which tower it pinged off of. In New York, though, triangulating a tower doesn't narrow it down much because it's so densely populated. There are blocks and blocks of places the phone could have been. But they noticed something very important. When Shanisha sent her mom the text at 8:15 a.m. saying she was on the bus to school, her phone was pinging on a completely different area than her bus route. So they're like, she's obviously lying. She never actually made it to school that day. She was never even on the school bus when she texted her mom. It appears that instead of being on the school bus, she was on a city bus going in the opposite direction. The bus was also heading in a different direction than Derek's house, the guy she was supposed to meet at the movie. This further confirms Derek's story that they never met in person. So where was she going? At this point, police finally received the DMV records for Christian Ferdinand, the name they had been trying to trace. They get an address and a picture of this guy claiming to be Christian Ferdinand from his driver's license. The license says he's 20 years old, and now they have a real address on file. Detectives decide to check the address on the ID and discover that Christian is actually living in Maine. He's learning to be an electrician and doesn't even live in Brooklyn. Police are shocked. They decide to trace his cell phone records and discover something even more surprising. Christian's phone was pinging off the same towers as Shanisha's the morning she went missing. This means that not only is he not in Maine, but he's in Brooklyn, near Shanisha at the time she went missing. Police go to Shanisha's family at this point. They show pictures of Christian, the photo from his license, and ask if anyone recognizes him. But no one from her family recognizes him. They're like, we don't know this guy, we've never seen him before. They're all even more shocked to learn that Shanisha had been talking to so many people online. Her mother was devastated. She had no idea her daughter had this many online friends, acquaintances, or relationships. It's important to remember that it's 2013. At this point, we knew even less about online predators than we know now. It's so easy to catfish people, right? People can create fake profiles, fake names, fake lives. So 3 months after Shanisha's death, police fly to Christian's address in Maine and request an interview with him. He willingly agrees to speak with them. They start off the interview by showing Christian a picture of Shanisha from Facebook and asking, do you know this girl? Of course, Christian immediately says, no, I don't know her. Right away, this raises red flags for the police. They already know he's been talking to her on Facebook. They already know his phone records show he was in contact with her 30 to 40 times a day and that their phones were together the day she went missing. Police decide to turn on the recorder and read him his rights and confront him with the evidence. When Christian is confronted, he finally admits, okay, fine, yes, I did meet Shanisha on Facebook. He says she slid in my IMs and we started talking. Then he takes a turn. He claims in the interview that Shanisha was obsessed with him. He describes her as a 14-year-old girl who was obsessed with him and couldn't leave him alone. Police are obviously skeptical. If you're not interested in her, why were you texting and calling her 30 to 40 times a day? And then this is the kicker. Christian says, this is actually a pretty constant problem for me. A lot of women fall for me. Oh my gosh. He then continues, all these women are always chasing me and I just can't deal with it. And I have to say this, competent, normal men who are attractive and have everything going for them don't date 14-year-old girls. A 20-year-old man is talking to a 14-year-old, it's probably because he can't get someone his own age to take him seriously. Christian then admits that he and Shanisha met in person once. He says, we met at a park and she really wanted to hook up with me, but I just said no. He also tells police that he has a girlfriend who lives in Boston. He claims that while he was visiting his girlfriend one day, Shanisha texted him and told him that she was pregnant. Police immediately push back. They're like, wait a minute. What does that have to do with you? You just said you never hooked up with her. Why would she tell you she's pregnant? There's no connection between the two of you. At this point, Christian's story starts to crumble. He pauses and then says, okay, I'm going to be honest. Yes, we hooked up. We met more than once and we had sex at least 3 times. He says, that's why she thought the baby was mine. It's obviously he's lying and he's getting caught in his own web. He's just going in circles. Christian continues to deny seeing Shanisha that day she went missing. He says that after she told him she was pregnant, he never saw her again. Police, however, confront him with the phone records, showing that their phones were together the day she disappeared. When Christian realizes he's caught, he finally says, whatever, I'm just going to tell you the truth. He admits that Shanisha texted him about the pregnancy, and he told her that he didn't want her to have the baby. He says she begged him to talk to her, saying things like, please, we can make a life together. I'm pregnant. I'm scared. Christian claims he didn't care and told her, I don't care, get rid of the baby, I'm not interested. He says that after this argument, he made arrangements for her to come over to his cousin's house the day she went missing. When she got there, Christian said, everything was fine, we were just hanging out and chilling. Then he says, Nisha got a call from Derek, the boy she was supposed to meet at the movies. After the call, Christian says Shanisha brought up the baby again. He started talking about their future together and how they could raise a baby. Christian says he got upset and told her, you're not having the baby, I don't want this. This detail, by the way, matches Derek's story about how Shanisha sounded like someone else was in the room when she spoke to him that morning. It also paints a heartbreaking picture. A 14-year-old girl who thinks she's in love is begging this 20-year-old man to make a life with her. She's scared, she doesn't know what to do. She's thinking this is someone who loves her, but in reality, he's a predator who's only using her. Christian tells police that the argument about the baby escalated. In the middle of the argument, he grabbed a pillow from the couch and smothered Shanisha until she stopped moving. He admits that after he killed her, he drove to the beach with her body. Christian tells police that he brought a can of men's body spray and a lighter. He sprayed the body spray on her and used it as an accelerant to burn her body. With this confession and the evidence police already had, Christian Ferdinand was arrested and charged with Shanisha's murder. Back at the station, police revisited Shanisha's autopsy. They found no evidence that she was actually pregnant. However, they did discover that Shanisha had called a woman's health clinic, similar to Planned Parenthood, in the days leading up to her death. This confirms that while she wasn't pregnant, Shanisha truly believed she was. In November of 2014, Christian Ferdinand went to trial. The jury convicted him of second-degree murder and was sentenced to 19 years to life in prison. How was it second-degree murder? Because it wasn't premeditated. First-degree murder requires proof that the murder was planned ahead of time. The law treats heat-of-the-moment killings differently than premeditated killings. The idea is that premeditated murder involves repeated, conscious decisions to go through with it, whereas second-degree murder happens in the moment. Before we wrap up the case, I want to take a moment to remember Shanisha for who she was. Her family described her as a fun, loving, full of energy, always dancing, always singing, and making every moment joyous. That is the Shanisha Forbes we should remember today. To everyone listening, especially young people, please be careful online. Catfishing is real and predators are out there. Anyone online can tell you they care about you or love you. They might not even be real. Someone online is reaching out to you, tell your parents. Make sure you know who you're talking to. It's so easy for people to hide behind fake profiles. And the consequences can be devastating. Let me know your thoughts in the comment section below. Hit that subscribe button right down there. And give us a thumbs up if you like our video. And of course, if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. As always, your support helps the channel grow, upgrade our equipment, bring in new hosts, and hopefully one day take this show on the road. As always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We will see you next time. Take care.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.